Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we extract the most important nuggets of knowledge from a stack of sources, all custom tailored for you. Today, we're taking a fascinating plunge into one of the world's most renowned institutions, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT. We've taken a deep look at its comprehensive Wikipedia page to uncover its origins, its unique culture, and, well, its incredible impact on our modern world.
Yeah, our mission today is really to give you a shortcut to being well-informed about MIT, understanding not just what it is, but why it matters, you know, and how its distinctive approach has shaped so much of science and technology.
Okay, let's unpack this. What exactly is the Massachusetts Institute of Technology? So we know it's a private research university, Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Right.
Established way back on April 10, 1861. And its official motto is Mens et Manus, Latin for mind and hand.
Exactly. And that motto, mind and hand, it really captures the vision behind MIT from the get-go. It was quite progressive for its time. It was founded by William Barton Rogers, really in response to the increasing industrialization happening in the U.S.
So a need for practical skills.
More than just skills. Rogers aimed to create useful knowledge. He adopted this polytechnic model. And this model stressed laboratory instruction in applied science and engineering. The focus was on the scientific principles.
Ah, the fundamentals.
Right. The principles that form the basis and explanation of leading processes rather than just, you know, the minute details and manipulations of the arts. It was kind of reflecting the German research university model, too, emphasizing faculty doing research, instruction through seminars, labs.
That independent research focus.
Yes. And interestingly, it was initially funded by a federal land grant, part of the Morrill Land Grant Colleges Act.
Right, right. And speaking of those early days, I found this really interesting. Its first classes were actually delayed by the Civil War.
That's right. They finally started in Boston in 1865.
And it was informally called Boston Tech for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Despite chronic money problems early on, it grew significantly in the late 19th century. New programs, electrical, chemical, marine, sanitary engineering.
Building that polytechnic base.
But here's where it gets really interesting, I thought. Harvard University. They tried to merge with or absorb MIT, like, six times.
Yeah, at least six attempts. It's quite a story.
How did MIT fend them off? I mean, Harvard was already such a powerhouse.
Well, it really speaks to MIT's independent streak, even back then.
Yeah.
The faculty and alumni consistently pushed back.
Yeah.
They valued their unique mission. There was one merger plan that famously collapsed in 1905 because the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruled MIT couldn't sell its Back Bay land.
Wow. So the court saved them that time.
Effectively, yes.
Right.
It blocked Harvard's move and really highlighted MIT's commitment to its own path, that mind-in-hand philosophy.
Okay, so after fighting off Harvard and needing more space than they had in Boston, they clearly needed to expand.
Right.
And that led to the move across the Charles River to Cambridge. In 1912, they acquired the current campus, 166 acres.
Huge space.
A huge move. And largely funded by anonymous donations at first.
From the mysterious Mr. Smith.
Exactly.
Who turned out to be George Eastman, the founder of Eastman Kodak.
And get this number, between 1912 and 1920, Eastman gave $20 million in cash and stock.
Which is just staggering.
Over $304 million in 2024 dollars.
Wow. That level of philanthropy really set them up.
Absolutely. And there was that symbolic crossing of the Charles in 1916 on the barge, the Bucinophore.
A nice bit of ceremony.
And then President Richard McLaurin launched the technology plan in 1920 to get more funding, rely less on the state.
And that technology plan was really quite pioneering. It wasn't just about fundraising. It established this industry funding model, new postgraduate programs, lab work, tackling actual industry problems.
So building those bridges between academia and industry early on.
Very early. It laid the groundwork for a lot of the partnerships we see today. Then, you know, the 1930s under President Carl Taylor Compton, there was a shift. A big emphasis on pure sciences, physics, chemistry. They actually reduced the vocational practice component somewhat.
Interesting. Pulling back from the pure practical.
A bit, yeah. But even so, as late as 1949, a report noted that people still saw MIT as basically a vocational school.
Mm.
A perception problem.
Right. And the university wanted to change that. So that led directly to forming the School of Humanities, Arts, and Social Sciences and the MIT Sloan School of Management in 1950. The idea was to create a broader education, to compete, you know, with the powerful schools of science and engineering internally.
Trying to balance things out.
Exactly. What stands out to you about that effort? Balancing the practical and the theoretical.
Well, what strikes me is how early they were thinking about this back in 1950. So many places focus on one or the other, but MIT saw the power in combining them, that synergy.
Right.
And maybe that foundation, that blend, set them up for what came next, like their involvement in wartime research.
Oh, absolutely. World War II dramatically ramped up military research at MIT. It had a profound impact.
Vannevar Bush, heading the Federal Office of Scientific Research and Development,
mm-hmm.
he directed a lot of funding their way. Significant funding, yes. The Radiation Laboratory, the Rad Lab, set up in 1940, they were crucial in helping the British develop microwave radar.
Wow. And other big projects, too.
Yeah, things like gyroscope-based inertial navigation systems from Charles Stark Draper's Instrumentation Lab, Project Whirlwind, an early digital computer for flight sims, high-speed photography under Harold Edgerton.
Just a hub of wartime innovation.
It really was. By the war's end, MIT was the nation's largest wartime R&D contractor, over $100 million before 1946. And that work continued post-war. Guidance systems for ballistic missiles, Project Apollo.
Huge government contracts.
But that deep involvement, it also led to pushback later on.
Right, the Vietnam era.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the late 60s, early 70s, you saw student and faculty activists protesting the war and MIT's defense research. It was a really critical time.
The Union of Concerned Scientists started then.
Yes. Founded in 1969, specifically aiming to shift research focus away from military projects towards environmental and social issues.
And MIT responded.
They did. MIT divested itself from the instrumentation laboratory, moved all classified research off campus to the MIT Lincoln Lab facility in 73.
So a real shift.
A definite shift. Though compared to some other universities at the time, MIT was perhaps less polarized. But controversy didn't entirely disappear. There were debates in the 80s about space weapons research, chemical and biological warfare work.
It's fascinating how they navigated that. But even while grappling with those issues, something else was bubbling up. The digital revolution.
Yes, a completely different kind of revolution, but MIT was right at the heart of it.
Faculty and students were key in developing early computing and networking tech.
Absolutely. Groups like Project MA, the AI Lab, even the Tech Model Railroad Club.
The Railroad Club, really?
Yeah. They wrote some of the earliest interactive computer games, like Space War. They were shaping modern hacker culture, and even the language, the slang.
That's amazing, from model trains to Space War.
It shows that spirit of tinkering and invention. And several major computer organizations came out of MIT, too.
Like the GNU Project, Richard Stallman.
Mid-80s, foundational for free software. Then the MIT Media Lab in 85.
And Tim Berners-Lee founded the World Wide Web Consortium there in 94.
Setting the standards for the web we use every day.
Plus, they launched OpenCourseWare in 2002.
Making course materials free online. Over 2,000 classes.
And later edX with Harvard for actual certification, really embracing open knowledge.
And that spirit continues. More recently, you see things like the MIT IBM Watson AI Lab in 2017. A $240 million investment from IBM.
Doubling down on AI.
And then in 2018, the announcement of the Schwarzman College of Computing, a $1 billion commitment to interdisciplinary AI, applying it everywhere from history to biology.
$1 billion for AI education. That's serious.
It's a massive statement about the future they envision. And their core science impact is still huge. Think about LIGO.
The gravitational wave detection.
Yes. MIT scientists were crucial. First detection in 2015. Rainer Weiss got the Nobel Prize in 2017 for it.
Incredible scientific achievement.
Of course, like any major institution, they also navigate current events. In April 2024, students protested the Gaza War, drawing parallels to past protests like Vietnam and South African apartheid.
And the source material noted the institution reported on this, including calls to end ties with the Israeli Ministry of Defense.
Yes, the reporting aimed to convey the information from the source impartially. Reflecting the ongoing campus dialogue.
Right. Okay, let's walk through the campus itself. It definitely has its own vibe.
It really does.
166 acres along the Charles River in Cambridge, divided roughly by Mass Ave, Student Life West, Academics East.
The clear layout.
And the Harvard Brooch, the closest one. It's marked off in smoots.
Yes, the smoot. A non-standard unit based on a student, Oliver Smoot, back in the 50s. It's become legendary.
Only at MIT. And the building numbering system, course one for civil engineering, course six for EECS.
That's another quirk. It comes from the original department designations. It's part of the MIT lexicon now.
And the tunnels? Lots of buildings are connected underground.
Yeah, an extensive network. Great for bad weather, but also famous for roof and tunnel hacking. student explorations and pranks.
Ah, the hacking culture. We'll get to that. But the architecture itself is notable, too.
Definitely. The School of Architecture, founded in 1865, was actually the first formal architecture program in the U.S.
Wow, the first.
Yep. And they have a history of commissioning progressive buildings. Those original 1916 McLaurin buildings with the Great Dome.
Over Killian Court. Very iconic.
They were built of reinforced concrete. First for a non-industrial university building in the U.S. at the time, shows that engineering mindset even in construction.
And the friezes have names like Aristotle, Newton, Darwin.
Paying homage to the giants.
Yeah.
And more recently, you've got Starkitecture, Frank Gehry's data center.
The crumpled-looking one.
That's the one. Stephen Hall, Simmons Hall, Fumihiko Maki's Media Lab Extension. Very modern designs.
Although, didn't the Princeton Review once say the campus was tiny, unsightly, or both?
Haha, yes, that's a famous dig. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
And student life. Undergrads get guaranteed housing for 4 years.
Yeah, in one of the 11 dorms. And they have very different personalities. East Campus is known for its thriving counterculture.
Right. And wasn't there a change after a tragedy? Freshmen have to live in dorms now.
Yes. Following an alcohol-related student death in 1997, MIT required all freshmen to live in the dorms starting in 2002.
Okay. Beyond the buildings and dorms, MIT is known for some really distinctive traditions.
Oh, yeah.
This strong focus on meritocracy and technical skill. Like, they've never awarded an honorary degree.
Almost never. They made exceptions for honorary professorships for Winston Churchill and Salman Rushdie, but that's it. No honorary doctorates.
And no athletic scholarships, no Latin honors at graduation.
Nope. It's all about what you achieve there. Your work speaks for itself.
And the brass rat. The class ring.
Ah, yes, the brass rat. Big, heavy, distinctive ring. Features a beaver, the mascot. The design changes slightly each year. A huge tradition for upper-class students and alumni.
And the informal motto, IHTFP.
Uh-huh, yes. Famously interpreted as, I hate this fucking place, during tough times.
We've all been there.
But also, I have truly found paradise when things click. It kind of captures the intense love-hate relationship students can have with the demanding environment.
Perfectly sums it up. And the rivalry with Caltech.
Oh, the prank rivalry. It's legendary. Very intellectual, very elaborate.
Like Caltech giving out shirts saying MIT because not everyone can go to Caltech.
Ouch. And MIT retaliated by stealing Caltech's 1.7-ton cannon.
They stole a cannon.
130-year-old cannon.
Yeah.
Drove it across the country and displayed it in Cambridge.
That's commitment to a prank.
Totally. There were attempts to put a TARDIS on a Caltech roof, heat-activated mugs changing from MIT to Caltech, the hotter institute of technology. It's all in good fun, mostly.
A rivalry built on brains and mischief. Okay, let's shift to the academics, often described as intense.
That's an understatement.
It's a large, highly residential research university, mostly grad students, right?
Yeah, a majority are in graduate programs.
And they have that 414 calendar with the four-week independent activities period, IAP, in January.
Right. Hundreds of optional classes, activities, often student-led, a chance to explore outside the regular curriculum.
And students just use numbers for courses and majors. Course 6, 8.01.
Yeah, that numbering system we mentioned, it's just how it's done, part of the culture.
And the grading for first-year students is pass no record.
Yes, designed to ease the transition. Because the pace, well, the famous analogy is drinking from a fire hose.
I've heard that, just an overwhelming amount of information.
Intense workload, high expectations.
Yeah.
But the curriculum also really pushes students to apply the knowledge. Back to Mens et Manus.
Mind in hand.
Exactly. Put the theory into practice.
And a big part of that is the UROP program, Undergraduate Research Opportunities.
Yes, UROP is huge. Founded back in 1969, it lets undergrads work directly with faculty and researchers.
For credit or pay?
Can be for credit, pay, or volunteer. And the participation is massive. A big majority of undergrads do it.
And it leads to real results.
Often, yeah. Published papers, patents, even startups have come out of UROP projects. It's been so successful, it's been copied by many other universities.
That's impressive. But there was also some internal critique. The hidden curriculum.
Ah, Benson Snyder's book from 1970. Yeah, he was dean of institute relations. He argued that sometimes the real learning at MIT wasn't the subject matter, but learning how to figure out the system.
Like using old problem sets, course Bibles, gaming the system.
Exactly. Snyder worried this focus on beating the system could actually hinder real creative thinking. It was a pretty bold critique from inside.
That makes you think. But despite that, the rankings are consistently stellar.
Oh, absolutely. Always among the top globally. School of Engineering is often ranked number one, and they're incredibly strong in computer science, natural sciences, business, architecture, economics, linguistics, math. Across the board, really.
That hidden curriculum idea is really something, isn't it? Makes you wonder how much learning is about mastery versus just performance. What does that mean for creativity long term?
It's a fundamental question about education, isn't it? But it also shows MIT is willing to ask those tough questions about itself, even with all its success. They're constantly thinking about how to foster real innovation.
Right. And that drive for impact, it extends way beyond the campus walls, the collaborations, the alumni ventures.
The global reach is astonishing.
They really pioneered those links between academia, industry, and government, didn't they?
Historically, yes. Like President Compton co-founding American Research and Development Corporation in 1946, considered the first U.S. venture capital firm.
Talk about getting in early.
Incredible foresight. Now, they did face some accusations later, late 80s, early 90s, about transferring taxpayer-funded research to foreign firms.
Controversies happen.
And they fought off an antitrust suit in 91 about alleged price fixing on scholarships with Ivy League schools.
Right. But collaborations are also key, especially with Harvard being so close.
Yeah, lots of joint programs. The Harvard-MIT Division of Health Sciences and Technology, the Broad Institute for Genomics. Students can even cross-register for courses.
And similar links with Wellesley, Cambridge, Imperial College London.
Building those connections.
But the impact of MIT people,
yeah,
the alumni and faculty, it's just staggering.
It really is. The numbers are mind-blowing. As of October 2024, 105 Nobel laureates affiliated with MIT.
105 Nobel Prizes.
26 Turing Award winners, the Nobel of Computing, 8 Fields Medalists in math.
Wow.
And the company's founded by alumni. Intel, HP, Qualcomm, Bose, Dropbox, BuzzFeed. The list goes on and on.
And that statistic, if companies founded by MIT alumni form their own country,
its GDP would be the 11th highest in the world.
That's unbelievable economic impact from one university's graduates.
It truly is.
Yeah.
And then there's space exploration. More than a third of U.S. crewed space flights have included MIT grads.
More than any university except the service academies.
Exactly. And 4 of the 12 people who walked on the moon graduated from MIT. Buzz Aldrin was one.
Incredible legacy, which really makes you ask, looking at this history of innovation and impact, what kind of future will MIT shape next? And what challenges will they face? Maybe challenges beyond just the next technological breakthrough.
That's the big question, isn't it? How does an institution like this continue to lead and adapt?
Well, what a deep dive that was. MIT, from its founding as this practical polytechnic school through wartime research, the digital revolution, that unique student culture of hacks and brass rats, it really lives that mind in hand motto, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Balancing the intense academics with this vibrant, sometimes really quirky student life, and all the while producing these world-changing discoveries and companies.
Yeah, the story of MIT just highlights the incredible impact you can have when you combine that rigorous scientific thinking with a real drive for practical application. That mind-in-hand philosophy, it's still driving innovation, it's tackling global challenges, shaping the world we live in. You just think about how that blend of theory and practice influences the technology you use every single day, from your smartphone to medical advances, maybe even to understanding gravitational waves from across the universe.